welcome along to another live podcast from Glow West, where we talk about sex, sexuality and the body. Today I'm chatting to two super creative women making audio smut in some very different ways. Jessie Sage is a sex worker, public speaker and writer who covers the sex industry, sex work and sexuality. She writes a weekly sex column in the Pittsburgh City Paper and is the co-host of the Peep Show podcast. She's appeared in Hustler, Forbes, Rolling Stone, Healthline, Mel Magazine and more. April Wood is a writer, audio producer and phone sex operator who frequently lends her voice to all manner of material, erotic and otherwise. She's the screenwriter for the Tales series on ZeroSpaces.com. So welcome along to you both. Thank you for joining me.
Thanks for having us.
Thank you. We navigated the time difference. We got here. We're all set. So we're good.
Somehow we got here.
We got there. The joy of live podcasts. So do each of you want to give us a brief overview of the type of work that you do? Do we want to start with, say, Jessie, so that everyone knows who's speaking and whose voices are there?
Yeah, sure. So I'm a phone sex operator like April. I started actually in camming and then discovered that phone sex existed and ditched camming because I like phone sex so much more. So I do that now. Phone sex, I create audio smut. And then I do a lot of other, I also make clips too, though. I do some, indie porn, and I create, with my partner, the Peep Show podcast and Peep Show Media. So we cover like news and stories from the sex industry. So at this point, my whole career is around, the sex industry.
That makes sense. And April?
Hi, I started making, audio smut for, Gone Wild Audio, on Reddit about like 3 years ago, 2017, and it started primarily as a hobby. Like, I had a boring old office job at the time. But then, like, I needed a second job in a hurry because, like, I needed to make up some income. So I was like, hey, I seem to be comfortable reading these sexy stories. I bet I could be a phone sex operator. And so I started doing that, and then everything just kind of took over. And I was like, wow, I enjoy this so much more than office work. So,
I mean, that's not hard, but yeah.
it's not. And then like I started taking commissioned audio smut work, and I was like, oh, okay, there's like some real potential here. So I really just kind of devoted myself to that. And then I started, you know, writing my own material, and then I got writing jobs like elsewhere, and it just kind of took over, and I'm very happy.
I'm kind of lured in by both your voices already. Like, I'm imagining you with your content because you've both got such lovely voices. They're very calming and soothing. So yeah, I can see why you're drawn and successful at this job. So the Reddit thing is quite interesting because I've read that a lot of people get into ASMR and phone sex and camming stuff through Reddit. And you know, that's such a huge community. And I know a lot of the conversations about phone sex and camming and stuff is related to OnlyFans, but then we neglect things like Reddit and stuff like that. So is there a difference for how people, if those pathways into the industry are different? Like, is Reddit more fan-based automatically, or is OnlyFans different, or is it much of a muchness?
I think April does more Reddit and I do more OnlyFans, but I guess I could ask you, April, like, if that's how you would, if you also think that. I don't do a lot of Reddit, actually.
Yeah, Reddit is an interesting corner of the internet because it's like, whenever you could just find anything. And like, it has this reputation for being a very toxic place, and it certainly can be, but all of my experience with it, luckily, has been very positive. And I would say that a good 90% of my phone clients found me on Reddit. Like, no exaggeration. Like,
that's
like
quite high.
Most of them found me by listening to my free content on GWA, which is, I didn't mean for it to work out that way. It just kind of did. Like, I kind of gave myself this free advertising. It took like a year and a half to build it, but like, they got to me. They found me. as for OnlyFans, I don't really know OnlyFans at all, so Jessie's definitely the expert there.
Yeah, I mean, OnlyFans has only come into the popularity that it has now, like relatively recently. So, and it's more video and picture based than a lot of the work that like phone sex operators and audio smut, people are doing. But because I do both and straddle like both of those worlds, I think that, you know, I do keep up in OnlyFans and I do get custom, audio requests on OnlyFans like fairly often. So I'll put out there on OnlyFans, that if people want to order custom audios, they can do that. And I get orders from there fairly frequently. But yeah, it's not really a platform for that in the way that the, Reddit forum is. I've done Reddit, but the thing for me is that I don't put enough like time and energy into it. So I'll put audios out and people will like them, but I'm not on there enough to try to convert people to Night Flirt and Sex Panther, where I do most of my phone sex work, or to just direct like custom orders. I have done it a couple times though, actually. I've had a couple of custom orders now that I think about it that have come from Reddit, but I don't spend much time on Reddit.
Some would say you're not missing out too much, but that's a conversation for another day. So when you're talking about custom content, what does that look like? Do people have all sorts of weird and wonderful fantasies, or is it a little bit boring, or is it just, I don't know, there's so much, isn't there, to human sexuality mm-hmm. and human fantasy that it's so varied, I guess.
I find that when it comes to custom content, it can be like as detailed, or it's always fascinating. Like sometimes it is like just a job, and sometimes it is like, oh, okay, I'm writing a femdom script. Okay. But like whenever I'm actually performing it, like I give it 1,000% to each and every one. I don't half-ass any of my audios, and which is probably why they take so long to finish. Because I also like edit and everything. And some of my clients who are almost universally men, unless they're women buying audios for their boyfriend/husband, some of them will be extremely detailed. They will want like their name said, they will want like their physical description mentioned, they will want like all the details. And some of them are just like, I don't care, I just want you to be dominant. Do whatever you want, just be dominant. So it really depends on the client, in my experience.
Yeah, I've had all kinds of things. So from, I get a lot of people who just want me to say their name over and over again, or tell them, you know, that I enjoy having sex with them, or, you know, I love their cock or something like that. But then there's a lot, I don't know what I'm allowed to say on this show.
Go for it.
But then I also have had people who've asked me to record their home answering machine message, like not sexual at all, or for their businesses, just be like a woman in an office so it sounds official, like they have a secretary or something. So I've done those, just recordings for their answering machines, which I think isn't something people assume we get paid to do.
No, that's the whole industry I didn't think of.
Yeah. I've also had people who've done like week or two long stints where they'll say they want to be surprised with audios over the period of a week or a couple of weeks that build on each other. And a lot of that has to do with like orgasm denial and things like that. So give them a video or an audio every day or every 2 days that gives them directions about whether they're allowed to come or not. You know, I've done those that lead up until the last moment when I kind of release them. Those are fun, the ones that go on like that. And then also just some, I don't know what about me attracts this, but I also attract a lot of people who are, a lot of men who are bi or bi curious, and they want to be given permission for their desire. So it's often not about me, but it's about me like coaching them and telling them that what they're feeling for other men is okay, and telling them that they should explore their fantasies. So it looks like a lot of different things. Sometimes that include me, sometimes I'm just a voice, sometimes I'm coaching them to get the things that they want, or to tap into the things that they want, that they feel like they need permission for. It's a lot of, you know, like April said, sometimes just kind of wild fantasies that are like really specific.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. That's fascinating of how you know, I think we have very stunted conversations about sex work sometimes, and especially in the media or mm-hmm. in 140 characters on Twitter, and we don't get to look at how nuanced sex work is. And a lot of people would say, well, there's a huge caring aspect to the job. So if you're mm-hmm. if you're giving mm-hmm. someone permission to be themselves, I think that's a really lovely thing. Mm-hmm. And that someone can then feel empowered from that and then go on and live a happy sex life if that's what they need, to have that yeah. permission mm-hmm. from you. That's really yeah. lovely.
One of the loveliest things a client, and several clients have actually said this to me in different contexts, but like several clients over the phone have said, like, you make me feel seen.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Wow. That's huge.
Which is like one of the, it's like, you see me. And it's like, which is ironic because I can't see anyone. But yeah. like just this kind of anonymity provides, and acceptance provides, like an ability for them to accept some part of themselves. And that's just truly one of the best compliments I've ever gotten, professional or otherwise.
Yeah, I think that the anonymity is a big deal. And I think that's why I think I'm attracted to phone sex and to audio content, because it seems like clients not being the fact that they can be anonymous means that they're also like very open in ways that they often aren't. So I've had a lot of people say that they have revealed parts of themselves to me that they haven't revealed to anybody else, because they haven't felt comfortable doing that. So a lot of the work that we've done is like getting comfortable talking about their desires, or getting comfortable talking about what they want or what they're thinking about or who they are, so that hopefully, like, my hope is always with those sorts of clients that they can have their space with me, and then that'll somehow impact the rest of their lives, give them more space outside of our interactions to later have the sorts of experiences that they want.
I think exactly. It's a more common thing than a lot of people give credit to sex work for. Like, one of the women mm-hmm. that I interviewed for my PhD, she works in, I suppose fetish would be the main thing, and mm-hmm. like somewhat niche fetish. Like, she does things like fart porn, or which I'm mm-hmm. obsessed with. That whole genre is just fascinating. I need her on the podcast. But she was saying that the fan letters that she gets are from people who are like, thank you for doing this. I thought I was the only one. I kept this a secret my whole mm-hmm. life. I've never had the confidence to tell a partner because I think that they'd laugh at me, or now your videos have given me the confidence to not even if like tell them, but to be comfortable mm-hmm. with themselves. And I think that's such a lovely thing to be able to do that for someone, because sex can be so traumatic for a lot of people. Unnecessarily so.
The best-selling video, I mean, this is outside of the audio realm, but the best-selling video that I ever did was one that I did with my partner, and it was a custom from somebody who, it was a bi-acceptance custom, who really wanted to embrace his bisexuality but was afraid to do that. And all he wanted us to do was, like, invite him into, like, our dynamic, and he told me once we gave it to him that he'd never cried while masturbating before, but it made him cry to feel like that may be a possibility. And interestingly, and I thought, oh, that's really nice and unique to him. But interestingly, like, that sold better than everything else I've done. So it like probably taps into something for a lot of people.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, I know, and I spoke to you both for an article I wrote back in, oh my gosh, February, March, it seems like forever ago at this point.
About, what is time?
I know, it's all gone. about the work that you've done, and I think it was yourself, April, when you said you often work with a lot of customers who feel very isolated and say that you might be the only person that they've spoken to that day. And it just makes me a little bit sad. You know, it's like, it doesn't mm-hmm. need to be that way, but it is for so many people.
Mm-hmm. And like, I'm sorry, I'm clearing my throat, but because I'm getting clients from like all over. I have international callers, but like most of my clients are from America and Canada, and they're calling me from like, they might be in very isolated areas. And with COVID, just that compacted that isolation. And then you know, you're discouraged from going out and talking to people. So yeah, it's like if you're working from home all of a sudden and like, you're not living close to your immediate family, then yeah, I might be it. And it gave me like a sense of profound responsibility in a good way. Like not like pressure, but like, oh, I want to be here for my clients, like emotionally, not just sexually, but like also like mm-hmm. giving them someone to talk to.
And well, speaking of COVID, like you've both said as well before, that some clients they want the coronavirus role play, which is fascinating. Mm-hmm. And some of them do not want that mentioned at all. They need the break from it. So has that continued on now that as we've progressed through the pandemic? Is there one trend coming out or not?
Well, I think I mentioned in that interview my client who, even though he had moved to working from home, he still wanted to do an office role play. And like, because we had been doing office role plays, and like, I don't know if he was literally in his office, but they were definitely set there. And then once COVID happened and everyone was working from home, he was like, now we're working from home, but you're still my secretary and we're still at work. And now he's gone back to the office.
So it's like, oh, really?
Yeah.
I haven't heard this update. Yeah.
I know. It's like a part three. It's like, so we're back in the office now.
Is it realistic?
Is he back to the office too?
Yes, the fantasy has moved back to the office. Yeah, so so funny.
That's fascinating. Well, I think, was it Jesse yourself? You said that like people eroticize trauma, so that's why they might be interested in coronavirus role play. Will you talk to us a bit more about that? Because I think that's a fascinating point.
Yeah, I mean, I see that a lot with my clients, but that they're calling and they want to talk through things that have been really difficult for them. A lot of ways that I see this is people wanting to talk through being cheated on, and they're like eroticizing being cheated on or finding their partner with somebody that their partner cheated with them on. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
I think I said that.
Yeah, we got to. Like the cook fetish as such.
Yeah. And, I think that a lot of them are fantasies, but a lot of them I think are true stories that they're replaying over and over again to kind of, gain some control over it. And I think that being able to feel like turned on by those experiences and then get something out of that works toward healing for them. And I mean, there's a lot of different things, obviously, but that's the one that comes to mind, is that I've seen that a lot, this sort of, what kind of relationship, you know, trauma have you had, or trauma in your life in general? And how can I turn this into something that is erotic or exciting to me, because then it, you know, it hurts less, or I could kind of change the outcome if only in my imagination, or only in my erotic imagination. But I've also seen that, like, I've had people who've called me and wanted me to play out fights with them, like real fights they've had with their partners. One time somebody called and he had broken up with his girlfriend but didn't feel like he could have the fight that he wanted to, and told me, okay, here's the situation. Here's what we were in a fight about. This is why we broke up. Can we hash this out? So I just stepped into her role and we had a real fight as if we were a couple, and he hung up on me like in a huff, and it made me feel a little bad. I was like, maybe I was kind of mean. I don't know. And I asked him, I messaged him and was like, are you okay? I hope that wasn't too bad. And he's like, it was perfect. I wanted to end it like right at the point that I needed to end it. And I never heard from him again, but you know, I've had things like that where it was really an explicit like replaying of something that was hard for them that they're trying to come to terms with.
That's fascinating. I wonder if he listened to that recording a whole bunch of times, or just it was like one and done and case closed in his head. Wow. So I suppose, thinking of phone sex, you wouldn't really think of fights as such. Wow. That's interesting.
I think somebody who doesn't do the job, like, wouldn't think of most of the things that we do, because I think the conception is that, you know, you call and somebody's sitting there moaning, and you know, I don't know how April works, but like, I've never done that. instead, it's much more relational. People call and they want to talk to you about their lives and their relationships. And some people just want to get off. And you can tell right when you pick up. But most of my calls aren't like that. They don't start off like that.
I would agree. It's definitely the exception rather than the rule that a client just wants to get off.
Right.
Like, he either wants to tell me about this fantasy, like, in exquisite detail.
Yeah.
And then play it out. Like you can tell he's been sitting on it for a while. But most of the time, like, I can't tell you how many times a guy has told me, do you mind if we just talk?
Like, yeah.
Mm-hmm. We have to do, like, do we have to do any sexy stuff? I was like, no, we don't have to. You can talk about anything you want to talk about. So.
But that sounds like definitely a strip club. Do you know, like, yeah. You're paying for some, you're like, strippers are like therapists a lot of the time.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Therapy is a big part of sex work.
I have people who call and they'll say, this isn't about sex, but, you know, what do you think about this thing that's happening in the news right now? And I'll have to say, like, we don't have to talk about sex. We can talk about all kinds of things. And I, you know, sex is involved in so many things, so it gets woven in. But I think a lot of people don't act. That's not actually the starting point that they want.
Mm-hmm. Do you think on that case of, you know, phone sex not being just about sex, but I think a lot of people mistake, say, intimacy with penetrative sex. You know, mm-hmm. if people sometimes are looking for intimacy, they think, I'll have a one night stand or whatever and it will do. Yeah. But it's not, that's not intimacy as such, and that human connection that a lot of people are actually looking for. So ultimately that can be unfulfilling. So maybe if we had better conversations about human connection and interaction, because that's obviously what you're getting. They're looking for that intimacy, but people think I have to pay for this and view it as sex to either justify it or use it as that excuse to get the foot in the door, that kind of thing.
I think that's a very like masculine thing too. I interviewed for a project I did a lot of men that are phone sex customers and asked them like why they sought out phone sex. And one of the things that's always stood out to me is that one of my interviewees, when I asked him, he said, when sex gets put on the table, everything else is a hidden agenda item. And I thought that that was really interesting. So in a world where like men are like, discouraged from sharing their like emotions or their anxieties or, the range of emotions that they have, but they are like encouraged to and allowed to show sexual interest, it becomes easier to ask for sex than it is to ask for anything else. And so I feel like sex is often actually in the way that you said, the sort of entry into what it is that they're actually looking for.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, definitely. Because men don't give themselves, generalizing, men don't give themselves permission to feel their emotions fully like women do. Like I've spoken to clients who are married and are not specifically looking for something sexual, but are just looking for a place to vent and like feeling all of this pressure to like support the family, be there for the kids, whatnot. And I end up saying to them, why don't you talk to your wife about this? Like and they inevitably say, and I've heard this a few times, I couldn't possibly talk to my wife about this. I'd look weak.
And
it's just like, so like instead it's like, it's not like an active, it's not like he's seeking sex elsewhere. He's seeking a place to like talk about how insecure he feels.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
That's really sad though, in some sense, because I think heteronormative Western culture is like, you know, monogamy focused, and you're born, you date, and then you get married, and then that's it. And that's your life. And it's like this one person that you're married to is meant to be literally everything to you. And that's impossible for one person to fit all those things. And I think that's why a lot of marriages end in divorce or there's cheating, because it's like, it's not fair that we expect one person to meet every single need that we have. And, you know, people grow in different ways and all that kind of thing. Speaking as a newly married person, it's going to be an interesting few years. But I think maybe if people were more open to, you know, to the idea of like different people meet different needs, and also like therapy is okay, you know, or like to cry is okay, and all those kind of things. So yeah. Do you think that leads to, there's that stereotype, and I'm speaking very stereotypically here, of, they say male customers and they're into femdom stuff because they just want to not have that responsibility and then have someone else in charge, all those things. I know BDSM is obviously a lot more complicated than that, but that's, I suppose, one of the stereotypes as such that you might see.
Sorry, go ahead, April.
Oh no, I've been talking a lot. So if you know what you're going to say, Jesse, go ahead.
You're so polite.
Yeah, I mean, in terms of that, like, I think that a lot of the customers I've had, and I mean, I only want to speak to my own experience, that are interested in being, like, dominated by women, a lot of that has to do, like, they're actually usually people who have a significant degree of power in their own lives. So it's usually not my, I mean, I would say that, most of the sub clients that I have are people who have pretty high powered jobs and families and a lot of responsibility. And so there's something to them that's like exciting about ceding some of that like power or the, letting somebody else have some control and tell them what they need to do, because that seems fairly subversive to them because it's something that they have more power, more control in their life in general. So, I mean, that's been my experience. And when I've asked them about that, cause I tend to talk with my clients a lot about why it is that they want what they want or what they're trying to get out of it, because I think it helps me to understand if I know where they're coming from and what it is that they're looking for and what needs they want to fulfill, then it's much easier for me to get into their headspace and actually, provide them what they're looking for. So yeah, I've spent a lot of time asking, and so usually what they've said is that they feel pretty overwhelmed and they'd like somebody else to take over. Although I've also had people who feel, disconnected, from their sexuality. A lot of my married clients who've stopped having sex with their wives for long periods of time also can fall into this category because they feel somewhat like humiliated by their lack of sex. And so that takes a different turn, but it also takes it can often take like a femdom turn as well. But those are kind of different sorts of, sorry.
That's okay. It's the joy of a live podcast. It's fine.
Yes. It's not even mine, it's my husband's. Oh. there's no one reason why people get into things too. So those are kind of broad categories of people, of clients that I've had that are looking to be dominated for different sorts of reasons.
I would say it's interesting because I advertise on Night Flirt as a submissive. But I get a lot of calls from clients saying, do you mind if we do like where you're the dominant one? And I was like, no, it's perfectly fine. I, whatever, you know, and yeah. I find that, I mean, by far and away, the thing I'm asked for most of all is cuckoldry.
Yeah.
And like,
same, actually.
Yeah. And
do you want to just explain that for anyone who doesn't know what that is?
Oh, yes.
I sense the excitement in your voice there.
It's like writing my resume, my list of special skills. It's when a caller, a man, will find sexual gratification in watching another man have sex with his wife. Mm-hmm. Like he will stand and watch another man. I'm allowed to say fuck his wife.
Go for it.
Okay. Sorry. And like specifically like, the other guy is the better partner. The other guy satisfies her like he never could, like that sort of thing. And she like really rubs it in his face.
They often want to like get, if we're playing the wife, like get us ready too, like make sure that we look really good for our dates and, that we're very desirable, in order to become like very fuckable, mm-hmm. but not for them.
No, just specifically so that they can watch. And there are some callers I have, like, for whom cuckoldry, like, they speak of it like a religion. Like, they are very passionate about it. They are, like, it is their life. And it is, like, all or nothing. And then there are some callers who are much more like, hey, have you heard of this thing? Like, and I'm just...
like, no, I've never heard of it before, ever.
He's like, because I want you to dominate me, but I want you to dominate me like with another guy. I know that sounds crazy.
There is apparently like big online communities that some of my clients have told me about where they talk to other men who are into it as well. And
yes.
Yeah, that there's mm-hmm. a whole online community that has its own language, its own set of terms.
It's fascinating.
And it's huge on like porn sites as well. Like the rise of that is huge. And, but it's even become, I suppose, a little bit more into popular culture now, but usually as a negative thing of a guy saying, oh, you're such a cook. You know, it's used as an insulting term. But yeah, that thing about the communities is fascinating because what I love about sex is that people will form communities, they'll seek out other people and they come up with their own language. Like dogging, I love, not personally because it's really cold in Ireland, but that's fine. But, and how, like, I find it fascinating how people, they have a language of like, you know, two flashes of your car means this. And if you have the window opened a little bit, it means this. And it's all this like subversive, coded language that you won't know unless you're in the know. And I just, I find that fascinating how people will figure out their kin and, you know, how to communicate with them. And yeah, that's fascinating.
I think that's interesting with there's a lot of fandom in sex work, and I think that that's really interesting too, because, you know, and this happens on OnlyFans, but it happens on Twitter as well and other sorts of social media platforms where like our customers will know each other and interact with each other, like on our threads. But I think that that's also like this sort of like community that springs up around particular figures, but also around like sexual kinks or things like that. And I mean, I thought that was really interesting in camming. One of the more interesting parts of my experience of camming was seeing like everybody in like a chat room and the way that they like regulated each other's behavior vis-a-vis the model, or tried to work to help models get to their goals or whatever it is. But it becomes this like community thing that's not just about asexual experience, but rather about community and like camaraderie around either the sex worker or this fetish or
Well, that's a really good point, because a lot of like anti-porn, anti-sex work, feminist and academic things only talks about, look, here's a site where the men are degrading the porn star and they're writing about, or they're writing negative reviews of sex workers that they've seen in person. And like, you'd swear that that was the only form of interaction that the customers leave. But it's nice to hear the opposite version of, you know, we're going to help you get to the top or whatever. We're going to, you know, have a community around you. Like, it's very supportive like that, rather than we're just going to objectify you and that's it.
I mean, I had the other day a troll say something to me on Twitter, and like one of my like customers said, shut the fuck up, like get out of here. And so they'll like come to your defense too. And that happens in camming as well. Like when trolls would go into rooms and say objectifying things, often other people who are in the room would be like, if you don't like this, get out of here. Like, we're trying to create, you know, a positive environment. And there's a lot of that, I think. A lot of really positive interactions with fans that extend beyond just your interactions, that become more communal.
Yeah, I'm like, In my most self-indulgent moments, I really enjoy imagining like what my clients would say to one another if they were like in a gathering together. Like, and also like, I've just really enjoyed seeing like on my subreddit, if like, it's very uncommon that it happens, but if anyone tries to stir any shit, like in any way, the others will immediately be like, hey, like shut the fuck up. Like, and like, get out of here. And like, and they'll tell me about it. They'll be like, hey, just so you know, there was this, you know, creeper on your subreddit. Like they'll reach out to me. Like they just like, I feel a lot of respect and support from my listeners.
That's really cool. Like when I went to the AVNs, which is, you know, the porn conference in Vegas, it was really interesting to see that a lot of the cam girls, now this is going back to, oh my God, is it 2015 or 16? I think it was. And so we're a few years back and obviously it hasn't been as big, but they had huge dedicated fans coming to see them, and almost more so than some of the, you know, traditional porn stars. There was like, there was massive, I think it was My Free Cams was probably the biggest one at the time, and they had huge booths and queues out the door for them to speak to their fans. And it was interesting, the diversity was a lot more prominent in cam girls rather than the porn stars, who were generally quite young, predominantly white, very slim, whereas the cam girls had a lot more diversity going on. So that was an interesting kind of note. But on, speaking of like porn as such. Like, I know you've mentioned before, the idea of like the custom fans that are the custom content and the fan community and stuff that you're talking about. Do you think that's why a lot of people are turning away from, you know, traditional porn, air bunny quotes around that, and going on to OnlyFans and custom content, because you're actually getting that more personal interaction with the performer mm-hmm. rather than passively viewing porn through, you know, one of the big sites or something?
Mm. Absolutely. Yeah. I mean, I also think that there are, like, I don't know if you would call these super fans or how you would categorize them, but I also think that there's people who just want to support you because you mean something to them in some way. So, you know, I have people every once in a while who just like send me a tip randomly that's not attached to any content, you know, just because they want to be nice and they want to show support. And those, I mean, those are great customers. But I think that most people who work in the industry have a couple of people who are like that, who just want to have some sort of connection to you, but not in a negative or creepy way, which is the thing that we hear outside of the industry. Just in a, you know, bring some levity or some compassion or something to my life or make me excited every once in a while. So I want to make sure that you know that I appreciate that.
And I find that like the role of social media, and this has certainly been written about elsewhere, but like the role of social media has been instrumental in helping consumers of porn see porn performers as human beings.
Yeah.
And because they follow them on Twitter and they see like, hey, I have a birthday and I pay rent and I do chores and I have friends and parents and pets and like yeah. I'm a person like anyone else. And I think once you humanize, like once you're able to see like a porn performer as a human being, I know it sounds like it should be obvious, but for many it still isn't. Like you want to support them and you really grow to appreciate them and not just some cookie cutter content that, you know, a corporation is telling you to consume. Mm-hmm. Like, yeah. So
I also, going back to your discussion of diversity, I think it's really important too. And this is where I think that a lot of people have, like, consumers have a very wide range of desires and of tastes. And I think that in sort of the mainstream industry, that's not taken into account in the way that it is within the camming and indie markets. And so I think that the demand for all kinds of bodies, all kinds of performers, all kinds of identities to be something, you know, to be relatable, I think is really important. You know, I have a lot of customers who've said to me that, you know, I look like their wives or I have bodies like their wives or their girlfriends. And that's something that they really like because they can relate to it. And I think that an interesting thing about the work that we do too is that often we like facilitate like stronger connections with the people that they actually love, you know, that it's not just that they're objectifying us and that they're really into us. It's that they're like trying to work out something in their real life relationships or something like that. And so I think that people want a whole range of things and that's something that they can get through all of the independent content creators, because you have people of like all ages and all body types and all gender identities and all sexual orientations and levels of everything actually. And so that also opens up space for people to like what they like and not feel like they have to like something in particular.
Mm-hmm. I think that's a really good point about, I think a lot of people would argue about porn that it's very formulaic and it's telling us what sex mm-hmm. should be like. And a lot of that time it's very much, you know, girl gives a blowjob, she's lucky if like she gets any attention before yeah. penetration happens. And then it'll be vaginal penetration, anal penetration, and then an external ejaculation. And it's mm-hmm. you know, and I'm obviously being very stereotypical here that that's a lot of mainstream porn, and obviously there's yeah. variations on mm-hmm. that and stuff. But I like that, you know, the kind of work that you're doing, like you're saying there, it feels a bit more realistic of like how complex sex can be and how varied mm-hmm. and because sexual fantasy is so vast, you know, there's no end to it, which is the fun part of being in this field. It's never mm-hmm. ending. So do you think that it's more liberating, is that maybe the right word, for a lot of people, like as mm-hmm. opposed to porn as such?
I mean, I think it is porn. It's just like a different type of porn. Yeah. I mean, I think that there's also a way that people are participating. And I think that that's an important point too. So it's less passive. It's more of, I mean, there's this like sociological term, presumption, but like where there's a combination of both like production and consumption, where you're both the consumer but also like somehow the producer of a thing. And I think that that's yeah. one of the things that's going on too that's really important, is that people feel like, I mean, the liberatory thing about that, I think, is that they can have a hand at seeing what they want, you know. And I think that that can be true for performers too. I also think that, you know, they say there's that saying like, be the porn that you want to see in the world, you know, and I think that,
I'm sure someone has that about, in a t-shirt.
Yeah. There's something about, creating what you'd want to see. I think that, and often I found that if it's something that I want to see, it will also be something that somebody else wants to see as well.
Mm-hmm. Like I think part of the appeal of audio is that it truly is like, you're bringing half of it to life yourself because mm-hmm. with your imagination. And like I think also part of the eroticism for my clients is like talking out the idea with me and like running the fantasy by me, getting my input. And so it's truly something by the end that we've made together in a way. Mm-hmm. And like in most of my audios, I am addressing the listener as the other person in the scene. Like they're always like, it's half of the dialogue. I'm providing half the dialogue. He's providing half of his half in his mind, and like it truly is like something we're doing together, and I think that's really cool.
And would you have a lot of consultation beforehand before you actually sit down and record? Like how much input do they get? It probably varies, I'm sure.
They get as much as they want because I want them to get the if they want to have like a full conversation to work it out. I would prefer to do that over the phone, obviously, because that's a lot of work. But, and like some callers are certainly like, I would like to buy a custom, but first I would like to talk about the idea with you, which is awesome. some of them will send me like a 6,000 word outline just in the email. I'm like, okay, so you're set. But like,
that's like, someone who's thought about it.
Yeah. That's someone who has been working on this for a while. So I better follow that to the letter. Yeah, so like they've already put in the work beforehand, but like it is very interesting then to take that idea and make mine in my way and perform it like how I mm-hmm. perform. Yeah. So it's always collaborative and at some level.
One of the questions that I got in from a Patreon was on a very practical level, and it was how do you make the noises for whatever scene that you're doing, because I think I have visions of, you know, when you get like silly putty and you put your fingers in it and in a jar and it makes like squishy noises. I don't need to give away your trade secrets now or anything, but I'm sure you have a massive collection of every toy going.
I don't have any toys. Like, oh. I'm not a toy. No, that's not true. I have a glass dildo, but I'm not a toy person, and I'll just say that. And I think that maybe I have a strange style because I'm not very performative. Instead, I do all of the things that I'm saying. So to me, it's important that like my work needs to be like an authentic to my own sexuality, or which doesn't mean that every single thing I do is my fantasy, because obviously that's not true, but like I need to be able to tap into it in some way. So I will masturbate and I will orgasm, like either on a call or in audios. And so everything is like the real noises. but I know that not everybody does that. So it also depends. Although I have to say, I did something the other day with a shower scene, and my husband just overlaid like a shower, like in the audio, like it was an audio track.
You can't mix like water and electronics, so you're good right, for that
so,
one.
So that one was, but it sounded cool. It like came out really well, but yeah, I mean, I usually just do the things that I'm talking about.
I have what I call an impressionistic blowjob, because like, I think I tried once to use an actual like toy, like in lieu of like, you know, a cock, air quotes. And I couldn't because the sound of my teeth scraping against the material squeaked too much. So I was like, this is not practical. So I was like, okay, I have to figure out something else. So what I do is I would be like, well, I'm not actually making the sounds one would actually make during an actual blowjob, because that would just be a whole lot of like mouthfulness. As it is, I need to give the impression that a blowjob is happening. So I just try to make like little sounds that might sound kind of, that might give you the idea of it. Mm-hmm. And also like I do my own like very practical Foley work. Like there's a very mundane household object that I use as a chastity belt sound. Mm-hmm. I do keep an actual belt in my recording booth, like if I need a belt sound. But yeah, apart from that, I just like mouth noises. I find them somehow. And if they sound right to me, like apparently I'm doing something okay.
You should put that on your business card, just like mouth noises.
It's very funny because someone I used to work with asked me once if he could use my blowjob noises like in an audio of his. Because he was like, because I could like outsource them, but I already have yours. So like, do you mind if I just use them? And I was like, sure, go ahead. So like my blowjob noises are in some audio somewhere that I don't even know.
I'm hoping it's some like Hollywood blockbuster or something that they just added you into. That would be awesome.
Someday you'll be watching a movie and they'll be like, that sounds remarkably like you.
Sounds like an impressionistic blowjob.
That's a new term that I've learned today. So I'm picturing like impressionist painters. So it's like classy and artistic and everything else there. Brilliant. Look, we might ask if anyone has any questions. I see Camilla in the audience and I know she's going to have a question because she is on one of the podcasts later on in September. So how are you?
Oh, you're muted.
Oh. Wait.
I'll put my top on just in case you can see me because I'll be moving around and figuring it out. Do I have a question? No, I'm impressed at how you're making me feel like a bad whore, because when I do sex work, I have never given the client so much thought as you guys do. So it's really interesting listening to I don't want to use the term professional because I've been doing this for 15 years and I should consider myself a professional, but it's really interesting just listening to you talk about how much care and love and compassion you have for your clients, and actually that's quite quite heartfelt, and that's what's lacking in the discourses that sex work that outsiders do not see, that they simply think that does not exist. So it's more of a statement about thank you for sharing that, such honesty and connection and the effort you go to for your clients, because I don't know whether that gets talked about enough or whether it's seen authentically. I don't know. Yeah. So that's all I guess I wanted to say. I'm a bit distracted by my boo because I had a bit of an operation, so
as you do.
I think about this all the time. I think that there is a discourse of clients as just being predatory, and that's really problematic. And I'm not going to say that there aren't predatory clients, because there are. But I think you need to be able to have both of those conversations in order to humanize sex workers. You need to also humanize our clients, because our clients are also just regular people. Like so many of them are just regular people. So, and who have their own like wants and needs, in the same way that we have our own wants and needs. And so, Yeah, I mean, I think that there needs to be more work done. I mean, this, I'm suddenly putting on like my researcher like hat, but I feel like there does need to be more work that's done on clients too. But I also feel like, clients, I wish that clients weren't so closeted, because I feel like they could do a lot to help sex workers, that they don't do, in terms of like our political position.
And I guess my attitude towards clients is, I know a lot of them say that they don't speak up on behalf of sex workers because of client stigma, when the reality is, I think that's because they're all married and they're balling around on their wives and they can't seem to be in proximity to sex workers.
Right. So,
it's a bit, but I would like to see more clients in academia, more clients writing about their experience.
Yes.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I mean, I appreciate the difficult situation that they're in, but it's a bit difficult to see them as allies when they're...
Right. Because we have to do all the heavy lifting.
Yeah.
We have to go out into the world and be sex workers 24/7. Whereas, you know, clients can, I mean, because I think one thing that, you know, so many people aren't aware of, and this is similar to what Jesse was saying, is like, they're everywhere.
Yeah.
They're not this like one little group of shady guys like tiptoeing around in trench coats. They're like your coworker and your uncle and your nephew and your, like, your brother and probably your husband. And like, they're everywhere.
Yeah, I mean, I spend time like texting people while they're at like work and while they're bowling with their dad and, you know, all kinds of like regular stuff. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. And like just wondering about again, that guy calling me from his office, like mm-hmm. he has employees out like on the other side of the door.
Right.
Like who even would think? And like,
it's also forever just changed, like, looking at people in suits for me, because I'm wondering, like, what are those guys?
I immediately want to give any guy in a suit my number.
New clients everywhere.
Yeah, when I used to work in an office and I would see my boss, like, close his door, I'd be like, what is happening in there?
Now you know.
Yeah.
they're so ordinary, and so, yeah. That's all.
Well, that's just, you see all those stats where it's like porn is a whatever $1 billion industry, you know, as opposed to like other ones who are also $1 billion industries. But like, if it's $1 billion industry and most people don't pay for their porn, that means it's like a huge amount of consumers who are mm-hmm. buying this. So it's not just like, you know, quote, like, you know, a group of very small people or like weirdos. It's like pretty much everyone, you know, and it's very rare to find someone who hasn't consumed some sort of sex content, you know, so interesting thing. Go on.
I was like, I immediately respect a man more if I know he pays for porn. Cause like very, very often, like they'll treat it like something to be ashamed of. Like, I paid money for this video, or I paid money for the subscription service. I know that sounds pathetic. I'm like, it's not pathetic. It's awesome. You're doing the right thing.
Right. Yeah.
It's an interesting conversation where it's like sex work labor is one form of labor you don't have to pay for.
Yeah. Cause it's quote unquote free.
Right.
Yeah. And then,
because women do it. I mean, I think that's a, you know, also important.
That's a huge, unpaid women's labor knows no bounds, apparently. Do we have another question there?
Kate Bush.
Kate Bush, what? Someone's having I got one question earlier on today on Instagram, and it was, what platform do you most prefer to work on? And I think that they meant, was it OnlyFans, or was it on the phone, or through the podcast, or that kind of thing?
For phone sex, I prefer to work on Sex Panther, only because with texting, because phone sex clients also text a lot. This is super practical. It will, go to SMS so I can see if I got messages and I don't have to be like on the platform itself. So it makes it easier for me not to miss messages, but Night Flirt has way more traffic and is more stable. So the most of my clients come through Night Flirt, and I like that. That's where I started my phone sex career, is on Night Flirt. It's got more of an antiquated website. So that's why I like using Sex Panther, because the technology just works a little bit better. But it's stable, and there's a huge, it's the one that's been running the longest, and there's a huge client base there. So I like both of those platforms.
I am unfamiliar myself with Sex Panther, although that brings up a complaint I have about NF chat, because you can't, I can't access NF chat if I'm not on my laptop. But yeah. I love Night Flirt. I think the clients trust it because it's been around for so long and it's established. So right away, there's like that awkwardness out of the way. And, you have to do your own advertising, but it's a nice place to hang your hat, especially while you're getting started, because it feels safe.
Right.
Yeah.
So that's an interesting point. Because you want to be protected and everyone wants to, but especially yourself. Mm-hmm. So, interesting. That has been absolutely fascinating. And I think it's so lovely to have a conversation about sex work that's so nuanced and, you know, especially this form of sex work, you know, because it's so, it's so diverse as well. Like, phone sex has been around since, like, we're about 40 years or something now. Mm-hmm. So it's only going to grow and grow the more phones we get and the more we live our lives through our phones these days. So that's fascinating. And where can people find you if they want to have a chat with you online or buy your content or send you loads of money? Either or.
Well, I spend way too much time on Twitter. So that's probably, and I have all my links there. So you can find me there at April_all the way.
I'm also on Twitter a lot. My handle is sapiotextual, and you can find my links there. But I'm on OnlyFans and Minivids and Night Flirt and Sex Panther and probably Instagram, probably some other ones. So you can check that out on Twitter.
Awesome.
Oh, and also my podcast is Peep Show Podcast.
Yes. And I'm so good at branding, I'm AprilW9 on Reddit. So.
You're busy bees. I mean, that takes a lot to like manage all those different platforms as well. So for play to you, it's another aspect of sex work labor that we need to talk about some more. But listen,
the administrator part, the constant uploading.
Yeah. Oh my god. Answering email.
The admin side of things is just not talked about enough. It's important. Brilliant. Listen, thank you both so much. You're both amazing creative minds, and I'm just in awe of just like the brightness of you and just how you're, you know, able to just navigate your job and have all that compassion and just be so creative. And yeah, you're awesome people. So thank you so much for your time tonight, and thanks for guests. And to all our listeners, so this is the live podcast, so it should be released tomorrow. I'll try to get a trailer up tonight just in case. And yeah, you can come find me over on Instagram. It's at @GlowWestInsta. Over on Twitter, I'm @Glow_West_. And if you like the podcast, please hop over to iTunes and rate and review. If you're on Spotify, please follow. And if you're feeling very kind and very generous and want to contribute to the electricity bills, we're on Patreon, and that's patreon.com/tortoiseshack. And we will see you next week. Bye.